This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in for Terry Gross. My guest, Paul Polak, is a pretty unusual kind of poverty fighter. A former psychiatrist, he spent the last 25 years working mostly with third world farmers living on less than a dollar a day. Polak believes most of the hundreds of millions of dollars governments and nonprofits have poured into poverty eradication have produced precious little in the way of results. He says that's because they rely on big projects and massive subsidies, and because they don't listen to the farmers themselves. Listen, Polak says, and you can find simple solutions that produce amazing results. Polak is founder of International Development Enterprises. I spoke to him recently about his new book, Out of Poverty: What Works When Traditional Approaches Fail. He illustrates his approach by telling the success story of a poor Nepalese farmer, Krishna Bahadur Thapa. Well, Paul Polak, welcome to Fresh Air. You practiced for many years as a psychiatrist. What made you change careers and start fighting poverty?
Probably a sudden acute attack of insanity. I'm not sure. I actually was working with chronically mentally ill patients, and I learned that really their poverty made a greater impact on how they lived their lives than their mental illness. So we started working on ways for them to get better jobs, improved housing, self-esteem, poverty strategies, and the poverty strategies worked much better than the formal therapeutic strategies. And somewhere along the way, I decided that even though homeless people were very poor in the context of the U.S., they were living on about $500 a month, and that was very wealthy compared with really poor people in Bangladesh. So I decided to go to Bangladesh and talk to poor people there and learn about their poverty. And what I learned got me very interested in doing things, and one thing led to another. It was really not very well planned.
You, of course, have spent many years seeking to bring people out of poverty in the developing world. And there's a moment in your book, Out of Poverty, where you make a point that seems childishly simple, I mean utterly facile, but within pages actually seems quite profound. And it really involves you're asking this very poor farmer in Nepal, why are you poor, and what could you do to stop being poor? And what does he tell you?
He says, looking at me as if this is certainly a dumb question, he says, I'm poor because I don't have enough money. And the way I could get out of poverty, if I could find a way, is to find ways to earn more money from my farming.
And, of course, a learned development official might say, well, this poor man is only looking at a measure of his poverty. He doesn't understand that he doesn't make more money because of bigger, broader, deeper conditions that have systemic solutions. He needs better health care. He needs access to sanitation and clean water. He needs access to education. He needs access to political power. And yet, what you discover is that his simple statement that making more money would make a difference actually gets at the whole issue in a completely different way. Explain why his answer actually holds much more wisdom than it seems.
Well, first of all, a lot of experts have lots of ideas about poverty, but they don't spend enough time talking to poor people themselves. And I have interviewed some 3,000 of these dollar-a-day farmers. And the more I learn from them, the more I realize that they're right. When a dollar-a-day farmer who makes a living on 1 acre actually earns $500 a year in new income, he then makes the choice of where to invest that money. And interestingly enough, the common patterns are to invest the new money in educating their kids, in providing health care services, in improving their farming practices. And even though they don't talk much about it, these people increase their power and influence, both in the community and politically. Money brings influence. And talking to these people several times over several years, people like Krishna Bahadur Thapa, I see a huge change in their influence. So in the end, when we in the West try to determine what's important, then we lay our values on poor people. Really, what we need to do is to listen to poor people, and they actually, again and again, I've learned, are very rational decision makers, and they act in their own self-interest. And I would trust their views of poverty and what can be done about it over any expert, including myself.
Okay, and so if we accept the notion that if they could increase their income, that would in fact improve their lives and give them better access to education and a healthier lifestyle. But again, a development official might look at this and say, but what he doesn't understand is that he is trapped in a situation where he can't make any more money. And what we discover in some of the experiences that you have had is that there are actually quite simple things that are within the grasp of a dollar a day farmer, which actually accomplishes that. Give us an example of something in Bahadur's case that allowed him to increase his income.
Well, Krishna Bahadur Tapa was living from what he could earn from his two-acre farm in the hills of Nepal and what he and his son could earn during the off-season finding work in the city. They had 1 acre down by the river, and that acre was devoted to rice, which was grown by using the rainfall that fell in the rainy season. And the other acre, they grew some vegetables and so on. But they really, what Krishna Bahadur Tapa told me on the very first day is what he needed to start to earn more money from farming was water control for his crops. So he was fortunate enough with his family to have access to a quarter-inch pipe full of water. And it ran actually during the dry season when vegetables sold at 3 times their normal price. But that quarter-inch pipeful wasn't enough water to grow much. So eventually he found, when he visited his uncle in Pokhara, that his uncle had used a low-cost drip irrigation system provided by IDE, the organization that I started, to take advantage of a little bit of extra water from that village's drinking water system to drip irrigate some off-season vegetables. So Krishna Bahadur Tapa was the first person to invest in a drip irrigation system. It cost $26 to irrigate 1/16th of an acre. And because drip irrigation is much more efficient and the drip irrigation system he invested in was much cheaper than the traditional drip irrigation, he grew 1/16th of an acre of cucumbers and cauliflower. And at 3 times the normal price, he earned $250 in the first off-season and never looked back.
So if I understand, he was able to grow these vegetables in the off-season, which fetched a high price. And the key to it was a very simple drip irrigation system, unlike the kinds of irrigation systems that are used in big farms elsewhere, which require a lot of power and are expensive. So the breakthrough here was a low-tech solution to his farming needs, right?
Yes, that's right. It took us actually 7 years to take the standard drip irrigation system invented in Israel and dumb it down. By that, I mean what Bahadur used was a 50-liter plastic tank at about shoulder height. So with a small plot, you don't need high pressure. And that system used very thin-walled tubing to deliver water through those tubes beside each row of plants and then little drip points that came out at each plant. That used the water in a very miserly way, and it actually produces double the amount of vegetables and a much improved quality and about half the water. So he could easily irrigate a lot more vegetables using this drip system. But the trick in designing it was to lower the cost. And we did that with some very simple steps. Most tools, you can pretty much tell the cost by weighing them. And if you take the wall thickness down because you're using low pressure, you've got a much cheaper tube. And instead of fancy emitters, we used little microtubes and punched holes. Krishna Bahadur Thapa punched the holes himself. And instead of a fancy filter, we used a simple flour sifter with a piece of cloth. Now, this isn't quite the standard of uniformity of an Israeli system, but it works extremely well. And it allowed Bahadur to use his small supply of water to eventually irrigate a quarter acre of vegetables.
And then the quarter of acre grew, and his income grew, and he was able to invest in other stuff, right?
Yes. 7 years later, from a situation where he and his family were barely surviving on between $50 and $150 a year, mostly from selling some surplus rice when they had a good crop and from working, they now are living on $4,800 a year. Their net income is $4,200 a year. He has dammed up another stream investing his own funds. He now irrigates 1 acre of vegetables and earns something like $2,400 from that 1 acre. He has 4 milk cows and sells $450 worth of milk to his neighbors. He raises goats and sells the young goats for meat. He has some fish ponds and raises fingerlings, which he sells to local farmers. And he's invested $2,200 in a new improved house. All of his grandchildren are going to school as long as they want to, although both of his wives are illiterate. And one of his sons is actually gone off to be a contract laborer in Kuwait, and he's sending some money home. So they are not only out of poverty, but they're in the middle class and upper middle class by standards in Nepal. Now, not all farmers can do as well as Krishna Bahadur Thapa, but once you add $500 a year in new income, you're in the middle class, and you have choices. You're effectively out of poverty.
Well, now, this is a remarkable success story for this one farmer in Nepal, and the transformational moment was developing a low-cost drip irrigation system that allowed him to irrigate plots that he could not grow before. But the bigger question is, can you replicate this among thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of people? I mean, are there these low-tech solutions which will allow dollar-a-day farmers in large numbers to transform their lives?
It's a little bit more complicated than just water. First of all, what the development community has been encouraging small farmers like Bahadur to do is to grow just rice, wheat, and corn and other subsistence crops. That's fine to feed their families, but it's a loser's bet in the global marketplace. And they need to pick 4 or 5 crops that are likely to have a steady market demand. One of the most important things to start with is helping farmers decide which crops they can make money from. And we can do that very simply by taking all the farmers in an area, interviewing 25 of them and asking them what they made the most money from last year. Usually you come up with 20 crops in an agroclimatic zone. And then we winnow those down by talking to the traders in the markets to find out which are likely to have big market demand and aren't likely to be easily flooded. And that brings it down to 4 or 5. And we recommend 4 or 5 because you can never predict the future value of any single crop. So actually, for instance, the other thing that happened is that in Krishna Bahadur Thapa's village, Eklefant, 68 out of the 75 families are now growing off-season vegetables. IDE, with the help of a local grassroots organization and some partners, helped the village form a collection center. That is, they rented a little warehouse, they hired a commissioned sales agent with a cell phone, and now all of them are pooling all of their vegetables and getting very good prices. So you need access to markets in addition.
You described how a simple, low-cost drip irrigation system helped transform this farmer's life. And there are other, again, fairly low-tech, inexpensive tools which have helped farmers elsewhere, a treadle pump, which will allow people to get water from underground aquifers, and some other tools and techniques. And one of the points you make is that people who do agricultural research need to focus on the dollar a day poor and not just on agribusiness. In a way, there are technological obstacles that we're really not working on overcoming, right?
Absolutely. 90% of the people who design things in the world today spend all their time solving the problems of the richest 10% of the world's customers. And before I kick the bucket, I want to see that silly ratio reversed. When you come to agriculture, the problem is that all of the cutting-edge agriculture tends to be from the West, Europe and North America. And in Europe, the farms are big and getting bigger. What is not taken into account is that of the 525 million farms in the world, fully 450 million are less than 5 acres. Most of the farming in the world is conducted on small plots, and it's a very different beast if you're doing crop rotation on a quarter-acre plot than on a 1,000-acre farm. So what is needed is a new agriculture. It's a revolution in agriculture, focusing on the seeds and cultivation practices and irrigation needed by one-acre farmers.
You know, you've described how low-tech innovations can help dollar-a-day farmers dramatically increase their income and improve their lives. But you talk a bit in this book about how traditional approaches to poverty don't work. And one of the things you say is that subsidies can undermine efforts to alleviate poverty. How? Give us an example.
Well, when I was working in Bangladesh, then President Ershad got impressed with treadle pumps and made a promise as part of a political process to bring 10,000 treadle pumps to his home neighborhood, and he would give those away to poor farmers. So what happened is that at that time in his area, we had manufacturers and dealers ready to sell pumps, and they were selling pumps. Everything stopped because the farmers naturally waited for a free pump. He then contracted with a large company that had ties to the government that had never made treadle pumps. They made a few hundred that were of very poor quality. The poor hundred were given away. Meanwhile, thousands of farmers who could have started making money by buying a treadle pump didn't do it. And several of the small enterprises who were making a living manufacturing and marketing and installing treadle pumps went out of business. That, unfortunately, is a typical story with government subsidies. Rarely do they work. I'm not suggesting that all poverty problems can be solved through the private sector. There still has to be a public investment in things like schools and roads. But subsidies on the price of goods and services for poor people just about always screw things up.
You say there are several myths of poverty eradication. One of them is that we can donate our way out of poverty. What do you mean by that?
Well, much of the current investments in development, unfortunately, are based on giving things away. My experience is that this just doesn't work. What happens when you pour a lot of Western development assistance into a very poor village is that all of the quick buck artists congregate like moths before a flame. What happens is that some things definitely improve. That is, you can certainly increase the yields of food crops if you have an army of foreign experts. But when the money dries up, so do all the good things have been accomplished while an army of experts were available. And bottom line is, over 25 years of working with dollar-a-day people, I am convinced that poor people have to invest their own time and money to move out of poverty. They lack opportunities, and you can provide opportunities, most of them, through private sector mechanisms. And if you do it through the private sector, it may take a little bit longer, but you have a sustainable supply chain. Right now, for instance, in countries where we're no longer supporting the the distribution of treadle pumps through the private sector. 50,000 treadle pumps a year are being purchased through the private sector systems that have been encouraged to come into being by our work.
Well, Paul Pollack, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed spending this time with you.
Paul Pollack is founder of International Development Enterprises. His new book is Out of Poverty.